I'm Jerry Pippin, and we are an Angel Fire Resort in New Mexico, and we're here for the annual symposium, paranormal symposium, and this year a film festival. And we have Travis Walton with us, a man of some renown. People know Travis, probably the most famous abductee of all, I guess, from Fire in the Sky and his movie. Now, you got a new book out, don't you?
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, by the way.
Okay, well, good to be here. Yeah, it's the same book, but just an updated edition with some additional material and illustrations and whatnot.
I talked to you once, and you probably would like to have updated that movie a little bit.
Yeah, I had a problem with the departures from reality, but I had to come to terms with that, because once I signed my rights away, I did not have the power to get them to stick to the what really happened. But
Travis, there's a good part of that, though, and that is that you draw big crowds. People come and see you. And so you can get the real message out.
Yeah, I think I've got a responsibility now to kind of correct some misconceptions. And not just those created by the movie. You know, there's a lot of people out there doing anything they can to get attention and try to latch on to what happened and become important for a little while. But, you know, here's the real story, and all the imposters and whatnot will fade away.
We probably won't go into detail much on the story. We've done several interviews, and we've also, they're familiar with the movie, but I have a few questions about that before we move on to other things. And basically, do you ever see any of those guys, those logger buddies?
Yeah, I see some of them occasionally. There's been long periods of times where I didn't see them, but Kenny Peterson moved back to the area, and John, he's working the night shift at Walmart, so I don't see him too often, but I have run on him to him two or three times. And then here a few months ago, Steve Pierce called me up. I hadn't heard from him in about 30 years. And so,
been that long, huh?
Yeah, but it was kind of good to touch base again. And every one of them, stand by what happened to us to this day, and haven't wavered a bit.
So, tell me, perspective. 30 years is a long time. Has your perspective about all of this changed from?
Well, yeah, I think it's gradually matured in a way. I continue to learn more about the way this sort of event affects the world and people and the so-called experts. But my philosophy has kind of matured over time too. I've come to terms with some of the things that used to really annoy me a lot. People who, make up stories about what happened and things like that,
Yeah, I noticed they were making up a few again recently on the Internet. It keeps going on and on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, they get exposed for the frauds that they are, and as time goes on, they people more and more can see there's a pattern here, But... still, over time I've learned a lot, and I've developed a better perspective on what happened. I was pretty frightened by the whole thing at the time it happened. It was very traumatic and took me a while to get over. And so, I've gradually come to realize that a lot of the negativity of what I experienced there had to do with just the way it came off, the fact that I regained consciousness in pain and so short of breath, just gasping for air, really. All that combined to make me react a lot more negatively than might not have really been warranted by what it was.
Yeah. When we talk about that experience, were you, while you were gone, familiar with the idea that you were gone that long?
Well, I didn't know how long it was until they told me. When I was picked up by my family, they could tell that I didn't know, and they told me, you've been gone for 5 days, and that was quite a shock.
Yeah, we talked about it one time when you got loose or free, how did that happen exactly? How did you get away from it?
Well,
they just let you loose?
They dumped me off. I woke up, and in time to see the craft leaving, and so, you know.
So you walked over and found a phone booth.
Yeah, so, you know.
Today you might be in trouble. The phone booths are pretty hard to find.
Yeah, so it was important that they did drop me off in a place where I could get help. And the fact that I was returned at all is pretty significant. So in hindsight, I can look at it and think, well, maybe it wasn't quite as threatening as I thought, because, you know, if they were totally evil, they wouldn't need to return me at all. As a matter of fact, if they hadn't, my crew mates would have continued to be accused of murder, and it would have covered up the fact that they were there at all. You know, the world would have come to believe that they had just made up a story to cover up for a murder. So,
do you? What was the difference between the creatures that you saw and those in the movie?
Well, there was quite a bit of difference. They were small humanoids. They didn't go, you know, create jellyfish or something. But you know, the creatures I saw were of a different color. They were a grayish white, and they had very large eyes, and they were more humanoid in appearance than what was depicted in the movie. But the movie's one concession to what I actually saw was showing the actor encountering these large-eyed spacesuits. As a matter of fact, that's the only spoken word in the abduction sequence. So I guess what they were trying to get at there was the reports of large-eyed creatures really was because they were wearing these suits. But, of course, that was just Hollywood there.
Did they communicate at all, telepathic, or was it, did you hear a voice?
No, I did not hear any voices in my head or anything like that. And I've come to think that perhaps that might have been because of the beam hitting me, some kind of an injury, because the fact that I came to at all unexpectedly. Normally, I understand they have a way of controlling people, but they didn't seem to have any control of me at all. And that may have been not because I had some special strength to resist them, but maybe just because there was some sort of organic disorganization in my brain just because of being hit there with that beam.
And do you remember the beam pulling you up?
No. All I remember is this electric shock sort of feeling. Felt like I'd just been hit from behind and didn't see it coming, and I blacked out. But the crew, you know, very vividly described, you know, how the beam just blasted me back through the air, and they immediately concluded that I was dead.
Really?
Yeah. They said to each other, yelled out, "It killed him. He's dead. Let's get out of here. We're next." You know.
And so, if it hung around, do you think they might have come after them, too, or do you have any idea?
They certainly believe that, and they had every reason to think that could happen to them. It might have been just
you got out of the truck and ran up there, right?
Yeah, and that, of course, is the main thing that brought it on me, is just being foolish enough to get so close like that.
Now, when we talk about these 5 days, that's a long time, really, to keep somebody.
Yeah, it was.
What were they after?
Well, you know, some people, and a theory that I kind of favor, I don't know for sure, is that maybe they felt that they had to clean up the mess. They had to correct the damage, that I was injured by this beam, maybe even killed, and they had to fix things. So that, again, implies some sort of moral responsibility in the event, in spite of the fact that, you know, I brought it on myself.
Necessarily as evil as you thought originally.
Yeah, that's the way I'm leaning now. I don't know for sure, but I can see how, you know, I probably thought that to a much greater degree than I might have should have based on the evidence, just because, you know, the way it happened.
You have any idea where they were from, or?
No, they didn't communicate with me, and I was trying, but it was a one-way street. They weren't responding, neither the aliens or the human-looking beings that I encountered.
Now, in the book, you revised it somewhat. So new stuff in there?
Yeah, some new stuff, you know, just an update on a lot of the people, the things that have happened to them in the meantime, and a few new discoveries and some new illustrations, too.
Physically, were you damaged for a while? Do you have any problems now?
No, I don't have any lingering medical problems.
You're a very handsome guy, and you get around well. And
yeah, I've been totally, you know, healthy. Matter of fact, in the last 25 years, I've never had a single day off work from sickness. I never called in sick.
Well, maybe everyone should be zapped.
Yeah, apparently.
Of course, I'm making light of a bad situation. You've dealt with this now pretty well because you're out speaking.
Yeah, and, you know, you do have to have a sense of humor because in hard times, it gets you through things.
And I, you know, on our show, we have people contacting us all the time. And somebody contacted me recently and said they were going to come up to Tennessee and see you. So you're making a lot of speeches later this month.
Yeah, I've got quite a, you know, if anybody wants to know if I'm appearing near where they are, they can just go to my website and check my schedule, travis-walton.com. And it's being updated all the time.
And we have a link to that.
Yeah, new stuff being added to it. So
Now, it seems there for a while you just withdrew from everything. Now you're back, you know, being very public.
Yeah, you know, there's been periods of time where I just didn't want to talk about it anymore. Actually, this last period had a lot more to do with just the fact that I was working too many hours. Just working 12 hours a day for the last 11 years at a paper recycling plant. And I just, you know, they were going to let me have all the overtime I could kill myself with. So,
right.
So I finally had to
take advantage of it.
I finally just had to walk away. They were going to cut out all the overtime anyway. And they wound up for a while cutting back production to where they actually shut the place down 1 week out of the month. And then that became 2 weeks. And so it was a good time to leave. And, plus, I kind of felt like I was leaving a certain responsibility behind here. Something really profound happened to me, and I was getting a lot of emails from people who was asking, where can I get a copy of this book? And all they were finding was people selling their used copies online for $100, $200 a copy, and I thought that was pretty outrageous. So I finally decided I needed to just update the book and get it back out there.
And they can get that through your website?
Yeah, I got ripped off on the previous edition, so I just decided I'd just do it myself this time. So I'm the publisher, and I'm the only source right now. And they can contact me through the website for ordering information.
Yeah, a lot of abductees that contact me, and many of them, they all wonder whether it really happened or not. At one time or another, then they come to some kind of understanding.
Yeah.
Hey, did you have that problem?
Well, you know, I can understand that to a certain extent. And before I reunited with my crewmates, I was doing some little reality testing of my own.
Uh-huh.
You know, had my mind slipped the cog. Everybody was trying to push that on me. Sheriff had a theory that the crew had hit me over the head and slipped me drugs or something, you know, to try to, but you know, once I talked to the other crew members and I kind of got a little better grip on things, you know, I realized, you know, we'd all experienced something quite profound, and it was as real as anything that had ever happened to me.
Now, Travis, you're a polite guy and very understanding with people. People talk to you all the time. These abductees tell their stories to you. Does that bother you?
Well, I've heard some good, solid stories, and I've heard some pretty far-out stuff that I consider a little bit too far out. But, you know, I don't like to point fingers, and I would never publicly, you know, say what stories I thought were good, solid stories and which weren't. Because, you know, I took great exception to people passing judgment on what happened to us without having even looked at the facts. So, you know, I quoted Emerson in my book, condemnation without examination is the height of ignorance. So I didn't want to be guilty of that myself. So if I haven't investigated a case, you know, really looked into it, you know, I'm not going to pass judgment on these cases. I have my own private opinion on or personal first impression, but But that's as far as it goes until I...
Yeah, I understand. Now, any of these abductees you talk to, and some of them, as I said, you're a polite guy, so you listen to their stories more than... You seem to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they any of them similar to what you...
Well, I don't know about similarities, but I do, you know, hear reports on occasion that are solid, and I can recognize, you know, that this is the real deal. But, you know, there is another phenomenon going on here that might even outnumber legitimate cases. It's more of a psychosocial phenomenon, but...
And we've talked about that in a previous show.
Yeah.
But you don't even dismiss that.
I don't necessarily dismiss it. It might muddy the waters a bit, especially in terms of the mainstream media's perception of things. But, you know, if good, solid researchers would emphasize to the public that we recognize that there is, you know, the wheat and the chaff, you know, don't lump us all into one to one category. You hear this all the time in regard to, say, terrorism. You know, they say, well, don't paint all Muslims with the same brush that you would the extremists, and so, you know, that's necessary to do in all sorts of thinking. You know, like, for instance, the Tea Party don't want to be known by the worst among them. So, you know, as much as possible, each person should be judged on their own merits. You know, and treat each case as a you know, to be judged individually.
When and did this affect you at all in a religious or spiritual nature?
Well, I consider myself a lifelong spiritual person, but not a religious person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mainstream religion to me is not really where it's at for me. But I think it did broaden my perspective, my philosophy, in a more comprehensive sort of way that I think in a way that I've actually benefited from something that otherwise I wish hadn't happened. You know.
Right. I understand. Just like I was talking about the movie, the benefit is people still come and you're able to get your message out, even though
they didn't. And the movie, although they didn't tell it exactly how it was, it does leave people with the kinds of emotional experience that we lived through. And so in that sense, it achieves what I hoped, you know, just opening up their minds and a willingness to look at the facts.
As I say, you're a nice guy, and it's late in the evening now, and we've been going all day, and we're going to have to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, but you were nice enough to come back and had a nice little dinner, I think.
Well, good talking with you, Jerry. I'm getting a little hoarse, but...
Yeah. Now, reason I mentioned that is I got to ask you, I wanted to ask you last time, what were these ETs, or if they were... something else? What were they doing in the White Mountains?
Well, I don't know. There seems to be a kind of a preference for
activities.
There seems
to be a lot of things happening up here.
Well, not necessarily. I think they kind of prefer activity in remote areas.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, that was pretty remote. And so what they were up to, I don't know. The researchers came to the site and recorded some very unusual magnetic readings right in the clearing where the craft came down. And then in the following summer, I found out that the federal government sent a crew of people in there to map out magnetic readings for some reason. So I always thought that was done from the air, but they were doing it on the ground, and there was a whole team of people. So that kind of shows that they were...
It is an interesting fact.
Seems like they were following up on something that the UFO researchers had uncovered.
Yeah, do you ever go to that spot?
I try to avoid it as much as possible, but I have been back on occasion. I suppose it's time that I very carefully return just to check on certain things. There was a profound change in the growth of the trees at that site, so I want to see how those are doing, because there was a huge forest fire in Arizona that killed trees. Well, a half a million acres and trees burned up. So the fire did burn through that area, but most of the trees that had this phenomenal growth did survive. So I want to see if they've continued to survive and thrive, or just what happened there. And there's some other things I need to check on research-wise.
So you're still doing a little investigation yourself?
Yeah. You know, for instance, no one thought of checking the trees where I was returned. You know, we've done all this research at the site where I was taken, but we haven't checked the trees at the site of return. So I'm interested in going back and seeing if the same effect happened there, too.
Do you think you can find that spot?
Yeah, there's been a little bit of a change. They sort of straightened and widened the road a little bit there, but uh-huh. a lot of the same trees that were near enough to that craft when it left that it stirred their branches are probably close enough to have experienced the effect if it's still, you know.
When you came back to the story, no one believed you?
Well, actually, it was worse than that. The town was divided. And, like, you know, the town marshal didn't believe it a bit, but his wife did. But his brother, the county deputy, didn't believe it, did believe it, but his wife didn't. And so, you know, so just among those four people, you know, there was that kind of division. So throughout the town, you had people on both sides of the issue, and a lot of people didn't want to even speak their mind because they, you know,
they didn't want to think about it.
They didn't want to be criticized by people who had the other opinion. So,
yeah.
So it, and then there was rumors flying like crazy. But over time, a lot of those rumors and the truth has gotten filtered back out, and belief and acceptance has grown over time. You know, people watch me in my every move, everywhere I go. So now they realize that a lot of the rumors about what I'm like are not at all true, and they've come to know the real me, and
so,
that helps.
So you're not a double agent or a super con man or yeah, anything like that?
Right.
So you're pretty well accepted these days.
Yeah. It's much better than it used to be.
Yeah. Now your plans are to make as many of these speaking engagements as possible?
To get the word out. I am not sure exactly where this is all going, but I feel like I do have a responsibility.
In other words, you ride this horse till you yeah. it drops.
Play the cards of life's deal.
And I mean that in the best sense.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. Things could change, you know, but I do want to, you know, make a positive difference if I can.
Travis Walton, it's always a pleasure to see you. And
good talking to you again, Jerry.
Thanks very much for being on. I'm Jerry Pippin, and you've been listening to our broadcast direct from Angel Fire Resort. And, of course, it's in conjunction with the 2010 Paranormal Symposium and Film Festival. And I tell you, it's a good little place to come. If you've never been to Angel Fire, I would recommend it sometime. You don't have to be a skier, but if you are, you're going to find out they got some great slopes here. Roberta Scott's our on-location producer. Jane Swartley is our web producer. Until next time, cheers.